welcome to another episode of
We the People Radio.
I just thought I chipped it up a little bit.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for warning me.
Well, that takes the fun out of it, actually.
Yeah, sure.
That is my fun. So let's see, what is today? Today is April 10th, 2022. I cannot believe it. The world opened up. Everybody's having events and fundraisers and stuff, and good grief. If you're not being if you're not involved in anything and you thought you might want to be involved in stuff, I mean,
now's the time.
Pick a topic. It's happening right now.
Don't forget your mask.
In your local community. No, without your mask.
Oh, no mask.
No,
okay.
No, we're all going face.
Just
full face.
Yeah,
full face. We want to identify the people.
How are we going to know anybody?
I know. Like that lady at the deli. I'm like, who are you? I look at her name tag. Oh, I've been talking to you for 2 years. Just the bottom half of your face didn't really match what I thought it would look like. Oh, my gosh. So, after that auspicious beginning, sponsorship?
Yeah. Ness? Yeah, our sponsor is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, right between Oasis and Pine Grove exits off I-5. Go up and see them. They got tractors, implements, mowers. I get a little shy on mowers right now, but they still have a few left in stock. Mower season is rapidly drawing to an end here. What is it, June 1st or July 1st or something? They don't want you to mow anymore. Might be earlier this year because of the wet weather we've been having.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, yeah, go up and see them or give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com. And I'd also like to mention our mention of the week.
Our free advertisement of the week?
Yeah, Robinette's Automotive Repair on Hartnell Avenue. If you've got any problem with a car or a truck, go up and see them. Those guys will take care of you. They got me in at the last minute. I had a starter issue. Bring it on down. And they got me fixed up in one day. So hats off to Robinette's. Or you can give them a call at 221-6880. Yep. They're located at 2251 Hartnell Avenue.
Kind of down by the Holiday Market at Shasta View and Hartnell. And,
yeah, yeah.
Anyway, they're super nice people. They do a really good job. And yes, Bill's Truck has been the dealership for Bill's Truck has been the beneficiary of a great deal of funds. And Robinette's made short order of that. So thank you for the free money, Robinette's Automotive.
Yes.
We can now spend it on something else, and I'm sure there's an appliance in our house right now.
Just can't wait.
Plotting against us.
To let us know.
Darn.
Yeah.
So let's see.
So what do we got going today?
April 10th, 2022. Wanted to let folks know that I guess I don't always advertise it, but I really should mention we do a lot of shows about a lot of different topics. And the things that we have done a bunch of shows on, I try to list at the top of the page. I cluster them under a tab. So marijuana is a topic we've been on a lot. Not so much the things that you hear, well, actually not the things you hear in the media, but the things that are not being told, things about the chromosomal damage that it does, the elevated cancer rates in children, the danger of CBD, CBS, that's dangerous too.
Yeah.
You can't put that on your skin. Okay. CBD and hemp. So if you're using, you know, hemp products and CBD or you're giving them to your dogs or whatever and you think, oh, well, it doesn't have the THC in it, so it's not dangerous. Yeah, it's dangerous. Please go to wethepeopleradio.us. And click on the pot tab, and we, and it's not just people with opinions. These are scientists who have done research. So go and get smart and smarten up some other folks, because this is going to be a massive epidemic in the future of illness and problems. Actually, if we don't get our handle on it, it's kind of like the second coming of cigarettes.
Yeah,
you know, we're in that phase now where it's like they used to do in the olden days. Can't even imagine it now, you know, that your doctor would be in a commercial, you know, I smoke cigarettes. They're really great for me. They really take the edge off.
I'm a Marlboro man.
Now you think, really? Doctors smoking unfiltered Camels. And they did all that back then until the science basically overwhelmed the industry and the marketing, and then people got smart about it. The marijuana industry is kind of in that that in-between zone, and I'm hoping that with the spread of information, we can shorten that time frame and not kill as many people. That'd be fantastic. No, let's not kill as many kids either.
Or turn them into morons.
Well, there's always been that. That's a kind of a well-worn path, and so people think, well, you know, I don't do it enough for that. But I dare say they have no knowledge of the cancer risk and everything else. And it's not just from smoking. It's the actual plant. So please go go check that out. We thought we'd take a break from the Ukraine and move over with our old friend Fred. Fred and Ross, I met a long time ago. I think it was at a Marco Rubio thing, maybe in Sacramento, and then I used to see them at Congressman LaMalfa's thing up here in the things in the first district, and they had so much information, and I thought, nobody knows this. So we did several shows with them, and we recently lost Ross, and it was like, oh, it was like the team is down.
Yeah.
And saw Fred a couple weeks ago, and he said, oh, I have a friend. Hamid can come on with us from San Francisco. And I thought, yay, the team's back. So, but perfect timing, because this Iran deal that the Biden administration, okay, we'll use the term loosely, is working on, is probably going to be as bad or worse as the last one. But I'll leave that to these guys to talk about. So Hamid Azimi is the communications director for the Iranian American Community of Northern California. And I've put a link on there for you so you can go and take a look at the good work that they are doing. And Fred Dasmalchi, just want to know how I did on that. I've been working on it. Is a resident of Sacramento. He's been a human rights activist for over 30 years and was arrested once in 1980 in the city of Mossad after he was forced to leave the country. He increased his human rights activities to be the voice of the people in his country. He's been active in his local community, mobilizing the Islamic community in Sacramento against Islamic fundamentalists in Iran. So we have posted for you previous shows. We have Miriam Rajavi's 10 Points for the Future. That is on there. And I think we might get into some of the guys that got rolled up for pretending to be Secret Service and stuff, because that had ties to Iran, too. But we'll find out from our experts. So welcome to the program, guys. I don't know who wants to speak first, but...
Hi, this is Fred Dasmalchi. Thank you so much for inviting your show, and I really appreciate it. And also, I appreciate that you're sharing, our memories with our friend, Ross Amin. And he was really, really very much against the Iranian government, and, we miss him, and thank you for sharing. And also, besides that, thank you so much to the station. And also, my friend Hamid is joining. Also, I appreciate Hamid joining with us today. Hamid, please.
Hello, everybody. And I'm so glad to be able to take part in this program with Aaron and Bill today. And I, too, appreciate the fact that you remembered our dear friend Ross. And to tell you the truth, it's big shoes for me to fill. So I appreciate giving this chance to talk to you and through you to your listeners.
Well, we worry that with all of this myopic focus on Ukraine, that all your good work on trying to get... Maybe, Hamid, maybe you could give people the short version or whatever of whatever you guys call it. I was going to say the elevator speech about why there is so much resistance to the Iranian regime from people who either live in Iran or are from there.
Absolutely, I'll be glad to do that. So, part of the story that everybody needs to know, Aaron, is that over the last 40 years, since the Islamic fundamentalists pretty much stole the Iranians' revolution, the Iranian revolution in 1979 was purely for the democracy. It was an anti-dictatorship revolution, and people were hoping to push aside the, you know, the monarchy that was a one-man rule in Iran, and the Shah who had basically eliminated all of the political parties and set up his own single party in the nation and ask everybody join it and ask the people who don't like it to get your passport and get out of the country. So this was the type of thing that...
Yeah, that's very subtle, you know. Basically, if you don't like us, get out of the country.
Absolutely. And this is the type of thing that people of Iran revolted against. And they had the revolution, and the hope was that, you know, they would have democracy and no more a single-party rule. And lo and behold, because of many, many different factors, the fundamentalists in Iran use the infrastructure that they had in the country, which ironically was supported by the late Shah of Iran, and they pretty much stole the Iranian regime's, the Iranian people's revolution for democracy, and they started establishing their own system, which over the last 40 years, people of Iran have been resisting. I basically tell everybody that there has been an internal war going on in Iran between the people and the fundamentalists who are running that country. And anybody who is interested in the history of the Middle East can easily pick up bits and pieces of data on the fact that it was really after the takeover of Iranian People's Revolution by this fundamentalist ideology that we started seeing this movement of Islamic fundamentalism in the Middle East. And in our movement and resistance, without any hesitation, we basically say this regime in Tehran, in Iran, is the godfather of all of fundamentalists, including Daesh and ISIS and whatever other names they have for it. This is the largest country in the Middle East in terms of its resources, in terms of its geographical position that it has between Russia and the Persian Gulf, with mass resources, long history of, you know, the culture having effect in other countries. And after Iran became what it is under the Islamic fundamentalist, the whole face of the Middle East has changed. So I want to emphasize that because I want to make sure that all of your listeners know this point, that this issue of Islamic fundamentalism that you mentioned at the beginning of your introduction to is something that we, the Iranian people, have been focusing on as one of the topics of discussions, one of the main topics that everybody needs to be aware of. And there was actually a book that the main opposition group that we support, the Mujahideen-e-Khalq, or MEK, published in 1993. And the title of the book was Islamic Fundamentalism, the New Global Threat. Mm. I think that title says it all. That,
yeah, no kidding. You
know, yeah, absolutely. So our story is a story of resistance. It's a story of trying to let the people in the Middle East and in the world know that we do need their support and their backing in what the people of Iran are doing inside the country. And as you mentioned, I sincerely appreciate Aaron, you putting that little blurb under, you know, my introduction on your website. which pretty much says it all to anybody who is concerned about what is it that we are proposing. And it clearly says that over the years, there has been pretty much just two schools of thought when it comes to Iran. Either the so-called left, you know, saying that, oh, let's go ahead and, you know, sit down, talk to them, appease them, because still there's going to be a war. And those who basically say that, you know, the war is the only option and there's no other thing that we can do.
Yeah, the old binary choice train wreck.
Absolutely.
It takes us out on so many topics. We'll be right back. We've got to take a quick break. We are going to come back with Hamid and Fred, and we're going to speak more about Iran and the real issues with that. It's not a faraway thing, and there are people that probably live right in your neighborhood that are part of this that would be thrilled if you understood what they were talking about. So we hope that you will always send the program to friends and family. We have a lot of people outside the country who listen to. The archives are free. Robert is kind enough to take out the Freedom Moments, a.k.a. commercials. So it's uninterrupted for you, and you can find it at wethepeopleradio.us. Isaac there. Okay, so Hamid, I took that piece off of your website because I thought it was just so important for people to understand, because that does seem like the only alternative. Let's talk forever, or let's have a giant war.
Absolutely, and you put it perfectly here in that this binary choice has been deceiving everybody, mm-hmm. both here in the United States and elsewhere, that, you know, we have encountered, I know Ross and Fred and I, all of us who have been seeking support in the United States for our cause. One of the, you know, blockers in everybody's mind is that, oh, we don't want to get into another war, we don't want to put boots on the ground, and what have you. And the gist of the matter is that we, in our movement, that I've been involved with this movement for over 40 years now, and we are asking everybody to understand that there is a third option, a choice of empowering the people of Iran, supporting what they are doing. And I remember, Aaron, that in 80s and 81, when the dictators in Iran started their mass executions and the oppression, we used to have rallies, and our basic demand was that do not sell any arms to the Ayatollahs and do not buy any oil from them. And the message was simple, there's a fight going on between the people and the government. If you buy their oil, giving them money and allowing them to buy weapons from you, the balance between the people and the oppressors, the dictators, is going to be tilted against the people. And over the decades, and especially in the last few years, where we have had major uprisings in Iran, that people have taken to the streets and they have shown that they are willing to pay the price on their own to do what they are supposed to do, it is really apropos that, you know, everybody knows that supporting them and in political ways, in terms of recognizing their right recognizing their right to resist the dictators is one of the most important things that we can do in this country. And you mentioned California One and Representative Don LaMalfa, and we sincerely appreciate him being part of, you know, the group of leaders in the Congress that have supported resolutions, specifically there's a House Resolution 118 that we can definitely talk about more, that he has supported, and it's basically supporting the right of the people of Iran for their uprisings, for their struggle for a democratic republic, and specifically for a non-nuclear Iran, which is also a hot topic, and people of Iran do not want to have any kind of, you know, nuclear weapons or nuclear power for that matter, and we can definitely get into that in more details too, Aaron.
I had a question. How strong of a hold does the current regime have on the people? I know there's a big resistance against the mullahs and the current regime. Are they you know, do they have a firm grasp on power right now, or is it a little bit challenged by the people?
Hi, Bill. This is Fred. This is a really good question. If I want to just look at last 40 years, what Iranian government has done to that area, at the beginning, we can see, you know, that start of the Iran and Iraq war, which a lot of people got killed, and a lot of people from both sides. And then after that, look at each country, for example. In Iran, the Khomeini, when he came in power, practically to establish his Velayat-e Faqih or supreme leader system, he executed more than 100,000 of Iranians.
Wow.
Mainly educated people, very much students, and all young people who they didn't want, they wanted freedom, they wanted secular government, and they don't want Islamic government. And that keep continuing. Look at what happened in Iraq. In Iraq also, they, you know, we know more than 500 old servicemen, you know, thank you to them for their service. The Iranian government, and through the proxy war, they used practically size bomb to kill more than 500 old servicemen in Iraq. And the casualty, you know, what they did to the Sunni, to the Shia in Iraq. And then keep this continuing. You will see Hezbollah in Lebanon. We will see how much damage, you know, this Iranian proxy in Syria has done. I can claim, and people in this area and other countries, they can realize from when this Islamic fundamentalism has come to Middle East, practically the number of the people in this area has been killed because of the impact of and policy of this Iranian government. The number of people has been killed in more than any time in the history. That shows where the people, you know, how much people have been suffered. And then I leave it to Hamid to talk about, if it's okay, Hamid, just to talk about uprising 2017, 2019, and the rest.
Absolutely. So what really shows where the Iranian regime is in terms of power and its, you know, grasp on the throat of the people in Iran is that things have really fundamentally changed, Bill. Last year during the Iranian election, the turnout was, according to the news from the government sources, the very lowest turnout in their so-called elections. During this election, the supreme leader brought to power a person who has been known as the butcher of the massacre of political prisoners, which is another topic that we'll get to. But this person was brought to power as the president after a an election for the Congress, or Majlis, they call it. The Congress was basically turned into a stronghold for the Supreme Leader. During that election, pretty much everybody or the majority were chosen by the Supreme Leader through the fraudulent election, and the Congress became a stronghold of the Supreme Leader, and then he put a person that was pretty much just in his camp trying to crush the movement of the people in the presidential palace. So he basically made everything work in his favor. Just imagine, for the sake of comparison, the House and the Senate and White House were all the same party, and there was no opposition. The reason the Iranian Supreme Leader and regime did this was that it was facing uprisings that have been getting wider and much more frequent in the last 4 or 5 years. And this was to basically stop the people's uprising, which did not succeed. And the reason we can say definitively it did not succeed was that up to this last Iranian year, which just ended at the end of March, there were 4 major nationwide uprisings throughout Iran. And the years before that, we were seeing maybe 1 or 2 national uprisings every couple of years. And historically, this was happening maybe every 10 years. So things are speeding up a lot. You're seeing a lot that shows that the people's side is getting stronger and stronger. And one of the acts that the people did against the Iranian regime was a couple of months ago, they took over 27 different radio and TV stations and interrupted the live programs with a message that was broadcast everywhere supporting the resistance movement and its leaders, Mr. Rajavi. His voice was broadcast to the people, which basically showed that in this one of the strongholds of the regime, which is its radio and TV stations, which is used, to feed whatever they want to feed to people.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to have propaganda when your propaganda outlet gets hijacked.
Exactly.
So I bet they were just absolutely. Wouldn't you just like to be a fly on the wall when they saw all of a sudden all their TV shows had the wrong people on it? I bet they were freaking out.
They did. They did. And I had the privilege of being able to save one of the experts that they had brought to their own TV after this interruption of programs, and he was saying, don't call it a hack. This wasn't a hack. This was beyond our network firewalls. It was behind anything that is connected to networks. So he was basically saying that our enemies, which is people, have infiltrated everything that we have, and worse things are going to happen. So the balance is definitely shifting dramatically in favor of the people. The regime in Tehran is not as strong as it was 30 years ago, and it really makes it much, much more important for the West to understand that they are dealing with a regime that is about to be toppled by the people. And this is one of those critical moments that, we need to understand that helping the Iranian regime is 100% against the will and the determination of the people of Iran.
What was, I'm just curious, what was the fallout from that action? Was there a big crackdown, or what happened as a result?
Well, the biggest fallout, Bill, was that because of the immense scope of the, they basically.
Uh-oh. Did we?
Amit, can you hear Amit? I'm sorry?
It's the Iranian government. They're doing it to us now. They're like, go ahead and laugh. We just took Amit off the air. No, are you still?
Hello, can you guys hear me now?
Hey, there we go.
Yeah, that's better.
We went into the cone of silence there for a second.
Go ahead, Amit.
Amit, can you hear us?
Nope. Something bad is happening in Hamid's world. Hey, let's take a break just a little bit early, and you guys can work with Travis and get the phone situation. We shouldn't have made fun of it.
We had a great thing going
we
there.
We summoned the communications gods to work against us. We're still glad that they pulled one over on the Iranian stuff, so ha-ha. And so you're listening to We the People. You can find anything about our show. Please forward the archives to friends. They will be up forever and ever and ever. We've got double of them. Robert's got a set. I've got a set. We're going to make sure that we torment people forever with this stuff. Got like 10 years of material, too, and a lot of it is still really current because the issues never really go away. It's sad. They just come back with different people in charge. You can find it at We the People Radio.
.us.
But I still believe what makes a man really has a chance. You've got to stand for something, or you'll fall for anything. You've got to be your own man, not a puppet on a string. Never compromise what's right and oppose.
We're back. we're goofing around a little bit. So it sounds like we got our...
I hope you can hear me now.
Oh, you sound
loud and clear.
You sound like you just moved in next door. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. On one side, it's a restaurant, but then we had incense smell coming in the studio, so I don't know what's going on outside. It's probably best if you stay where you are.
Yeah, sorry about that. You know, my cell cover just dropped here, and I...
Oh, we never have that here. Oh my gosh, when I call people when I'm traveling, because I spend a lot of time on the road, and I'll be driving up the highway, I'm like, well, okay, I'm going through the mountains, so I might lose you. After about the fifth time, they're like, could you call me tomorrow?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Okay. No problem. So I don't know how much of my response to Bill's question you guys heard.
We heard tons of it, except just the very end. Just the very end, it started to screw up.
So the major fallout was that the regime had to shut down its main TV station. They went into a lockdown. They did not allow the employees to leave until they questioned everybody. And there are systems in terms of the back end stuff that they had that were damaged so much that they still have not been able to recover. But on top of the technical stuff, as you mentioned there, and you know, the big fallout was that they had been
been hit at the core of their propaganda machine, and they know that people, the organized, you know, cells that are doing that, they had proven that they are capable of doing the same thing, and we have seen a number of other instances where in the shopping malls, all of a sudden the PA system is taken over by people and slogans against the supreme leader are broadcast and things of that sort. And that has been happening pretty every week.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. On a weekly basis?
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, that's got to be distressing.
Yeah. There's also, this is Fred, there's another element also I think was very important that a couple months ago when, you know, it was the big ceremony for the anniversary of the Qasem Soleimani in Iran. Therefore, what happened, there was a city in the west of Iran, Shahr Khoi, in that they had a big, big plan for that day, and practically they prepared very long, about 20 feet long, a statue practically to celebrate Qasem Soleimani, who, the good thing he got, you know, he got killed by our service people. Practically then in that day, they had the governor, they had all these religion leaders, it was around 12:30, they had that big program for him to show practically his statue. And by night, by evening, almost getting dark, at 8:30, the resistance units, practically they explode and they destroy that statue. And that was a big message to all the Iranian government and their agents that the opposition, the resistance units are strong and they can do anything they want in Iran.
Yeah.
And they are just waiting for the right time when uprising happening practically to do what they need to do.
Well, that when you had told me that story, I thought, gosh, there's nothing that better illustrates the fact that negotiating with these guys, we're on really different teams. I mean, Soleimani was not a good guy, and here they're erecting a statue to him. But I think it's pretty great that the resistance is powerful enough to be able to pull off something like that. I mean, we've watched people in this country destroy statues, and there's 900 miles of video footage. How did they get in there and do it? Would they blow it up or something?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, they actually, you brought up a very good point, Aaron. They set it on fire and destroyed it to the point that it couldn't be repaired. And when you, in this, you know, age of internet and cell phones and what have you, you gotta, everybody understands that it's impossible for any group to go after such a target without people seeing them, without somebody noticing that, you know, the 30-foot tall statue that was erected, and mind you, this was on the eve of the Iranian People's Revolution ceremonies that was going to happen the day after. The city was on high alert, and people were definitely out there looking at this thing that showed up in their neighborhood at 8 p.m. in the evening. And when the resistance units are able to go and take care of this act, it means that people around the area, people in that neighborhood, they are for them. They are with them. They see what they are doing. They support them. That's why the regime was not able to do anything, do not arrest anybody.
Yeah, because if they were a minority faction,
somebody would rat them out.
They would be all being burned in effigy, probably.
Absolutely. So that's why, you know, it's acts like this, examples like this, that tells us very clearly that these units that are fighting against the regime inside Iran, they have the support of the absolute majority of the people, without any doubt.
Well, when we spoke with Ross and Fred some years back, the thing I walked away with that that just really never left me was that every time, like I remember what they told us about that Iran deal during during Obama's presidency, and they said, you know, if they sign that deal and they give them a bunch of money, they'll kill all the political prisoners because now they no longer have value, and they will set us, the people in Iran who want to take the regime down, if they would just leave us alone to get it done, we would be able to make that happen. But they keep interfering. It's like, stop helping already. Is that still the case?
And that is still the case. And you know, the logic behind sitting down with a regime that is the major sponsor of terrorist groups in the Middle East, a regime that, as Fred mentioned, you know, this one entity, which is the Islamic Revolutionary Guards, or IRGC, the Guards Corp, IRGC, is responsible for at least 500 or 600. I believe the number that the Department of Defense of the United States published was 620-some servicemen who were killed in Iraq by the roadside bombs that were sent by this IRGC into Iraq. When we're dealing with an entity like this, you know, we should not be sitting down and negotiating with them on the issue of whether or not, you know, this group should be delisted so that we're going to have another, you know, agreement the way we it was done during the Obama time. What's the end game here? What is it that we are trying to achieve? Because as you mentioned, you give them money, you release their money, you give them their money, they're not going to go back and say, oh, we are going to be good actors now, we're going to stop believing everything that we believe in. Of course not. They're going to use it in their own advantage, because they want to dominate the Middle East, and they want to have their so-called Khalifa or the Islamic rule the entire world. It's true, and at the same time funny and sad and disturbing, that they talk about turning the White House into a prayer cell for the Khalifa themselves. And wow. they are talking about things like this, and then, you know, we want to, you know, sit down and talk with them. Doesn't make sense. And that's why, you know, we are constantly, over the years, I know Ross and I used to basically pitch the same thing anywhere that we were talking together, that the real solution is side with the people of Iran. You know, don't overlook the fact that since you are negotiating with these people, you want to keep quiet about, you know, the 1,500 people that they killed in the 2018 uprising in Iran. Don't stay quiet about, you know, the fact that they are crushing any kind of dissent inside the country. Put the human rights issue on the table talking to them.
Right.
I would like to add also, you know, the Obama administration, when they look at the beginning of the dealing with Iran, they said that they are working on changing of Iranian regime behavior. No, as of today, we need to look at it. We did really cover, we really are able to change the Iranian behavior.
Yeah, I think we can scribble that off our Christmas list. I don't think that we're going to get that.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty obvious and documented that anytime we give them a large amount of money, we know exactly what they're doing with it. I mean, it goes all over the world to fund different terrorist organizations, and they've shown nothing that tells us that behavior will change if we just be nice to them again.
Yeah, and what kind of hubris do you have to go, well, hey, if we tell them to be nice, they're going to go
through. Yeah, they'll be nice this time. Let's just give them a few more billion dollars. But that's not going to change, is it?
Absolutely. You brought a very good point. You know, that GCPA 2015 started, practically, there were two elements on that. one element we can see today after that, as Aaron mentioned, put more pressure on the Iranian people against human rights. And as my friend Hamid mentioned about 2019 uprising, killing 1,500 people. Element number two, we see the impact of that JCPOA is increasing the money Iranian government they got. They increased terror activity in Gulf area. You see in Middle East, you see this proxy war actually become, through Iranian government, become more stronger. These are the problems that we can see the weakness of last negotiation. Mm-hmm. Therefore, the question is that if all this stuff didn't happen in last negotiation, then what are we doing this time?
These people couldn't train a dog. It's very unlikely they're gonna get any foreign policy correct, because honestly, if you employed these methods with a dog, you would have a really bad dog. Yeah. You know, let's reward them for bad behavior. Let's give them extra food. Let's let them run all over the house and mess up the furniture and do all sorts of stuff, and then
when they bite somebody, we'll just
give them more food.
Absolutely, yeah.
and a better living room to mess up. It's crazy to me because it's so obvious.
That's why I think this is what is missing in current negotiation, that we when we look at it, one of the problem right now is practically the Iranian activity in the Gulf area and in that area. And then this is what the action is missing right now, is we are not looking at the terrorist activity of the Iranian government. We know right now, you know, I think the best approach is practically we need to look at this activity of Iranian government. We need to talk. We need to use the experience from the countries like Israel, like the Gulf countries, like Saudi Arabia, like Bahrain, like Emirates. They are having experience in that area because they are fighting. They are against this, you know, Iranian government. They're using their proxy against them. So we need to negotiate with them. We need to come up with some comprehensive plan that includes how we are going to stop these terrorist activities of the Iranian proxy in that area. And then we can talk about it, how that much also is in connected to the within U.S., within our security also. Therefore, practically, this is what is missing right now. This was missing last time and was missing right now. I think if you heard lately, there is a relationship between Israel and Bahrain and Emirates. They're trying to come up with a strategy how to counter this terrorism activity of the proxy of Iranian government. I think one of the solutions we need to do is, is come up with a strategy, with a plan. Not only the Middle East countries, also European countries, Canada, and USA be the leader on that, to come up with a strategy. How can we practically to stop this proxy war of Iranian regime in that area? Like, so how come up, you know, we did against ISIS? We have to do some kind of a strategy to stop them practically.
Right. Yeah, I think the current administration is looking back at
Obama 2.0.
At the Obama plan as such a big success, and they just want to repeat the same thing all over again without really doing anything much different, and we're going to get the same result.
Well, all the same people are in there.
And same people.
I think that one line in your that I swiped from your website and posted, the solution to the Iranian problem is neither appeasement of terrorist regimes nor a foreign war, but democratic change by relying on the Iranian people and their organized resistance. And honestly, if you guys weren't organized, well, okay, then that would be like, yeah, that's a nice idea, but you're going to get crushed. But you guys are organized. I mean, your resistance movement is really solid in this country and in other countries. When we come back in the next hour, I want you to tell people about your Miriam Rajavi and your giant things that have happened all around the world that have involved so many people, because it's incredibly impressive. We'll be right back with Hamid and Fred, and you're listening to We the People at WeThePeopleRadio.us. Yeah. Good afternoon. Welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. They're on the heels of Jackson Browne's Redneck Friend. Why did we pick that for our theme song, Bill?
Well, I don't know. I like the riff. I don't know.
We did it all those years ago, and it's like, little did we know we'd have to listen to it for over a decade. If you ever do a radio program, be really careful what you pick for your for your little theme song. You'd be in trouble. So, talk about our sponsor.
Our sponsor is Pape Machinery, and they are a local John Deere ag and turf dealer. And they are 44 stores strong now in Northern California, Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. So if you go up and see them and they don't have what you want...
they've got 43 other stores.
That's right. They got a lot of other stores they can draw from, which really gives them a big advantage in the market for the customer availability. So go up and see them. They're at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. Or you can give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da!
Yeah.
And the brief free announcement of the day, because we like to highlight local businesses that are actually doing a great job because nobody has any extra money. So,
So if
Bill had to have his truck repaired, we thought we'd throw them a...
Yeah, I know. You know, I've talked to a lot of people, and they're like, geez, you know, where do I find an honest mechanic that can, you know, not take advantage of me? You know what? I found one. It's Robinette's Automotive, and they're at 2251 Hartnell Avenue in Reading, and they'll do a great job for you. They aren't overpriced, and they're an honest bunch of guys, easy to work with. So you can give them a call, 221-6880, and talk to Rusty over there. He'll get you fixed up and get you in and out and take good care of you.
Very nice people. It's nice. Now I don't have to worry. Like, typically, if Bill wasn't home on time, I'm like, uh-oh. Did his truck not start?
Not to worry about that anymore.
So now we know Bill will be gone and return. Yay. That was the whole point.
Unless you get trapped in a car wash. I had a little incident yesterday where I kind of got stuck in a car wash.
Spinning brush came down, and it was like, okay, Bill, welcome to the car wash.
Yeah, you're not leaving.
He had to get out and go get the guy to get him out. He was gone for a long time. I'm like, what the heck? I was just leaving the house to go find him.
Yeah, that was a new one.
Hey, he's like, I got stuck in the car wash. Now, normally you'd be like, oh, sure, Aaron, you're a big idiot. Bill's really stuck in the car wash. No, he was stuck in the car wash. His wheels were really, really clean, though.
Yeah, it went through a couple times.
The things that happen in the real world. So, you know, it's not all unpleasantness. We don't like to come on Sunday and just talk about the unpleasantness. There's so much of it, and we're bombarded with it all week long. It's easy for people to just, you know, stick your head in the sand and, I don't know, just give up. It's no point. It's too late. Blah, blah, blah. Well, if it was too late, the guys that we're talking to this morning would have given up a long time ago because, let's face it, trying to flip the regime in Iran seems like it seems a whole lot harder than getting out of the car wash.
Yeah. Yeah,
I guess
I'm
if we
sure
were going to use a recent comparison. But they just keep pressing at it. And there are a lot of people involved. Can one of you guys or both of you give us your vantage point on the volume of people outside Iran and the kinds of events and things you guys have been having?
Absolutely. And it's what is really important is what you just mentioned, that there is no giving up, and we just gotta keep on going. And what we have outside the country is really built on what we have inside our country, and the 120,000 people who have lost their lives in the last 40 years fighting this government, as Fred mentioned. I hope there would be time sometimes for us to talk about the 30,000 political prisoners who were massacred in one summer in 1988 in Iran. And these were all, people of different ages who were arrested for resisting this regime. They had prison sentences, and at a point, the leader of
you know, the fundamentalist Khomeini himself alive. He issued a fatwa or religious decree and had all of them killed. So people of Iran inside the country have paid a very, very heavy price for doing what they are supposed to do, is, you know, resisting the dictators and fighting for their own freedom and democracy. And when it comes to fighting for freedom and democracy, as you mentioned, being organized is one of the main keys. And we are blessed as Iranian people that we've had organizations such as the People's Mujahideen Organization of Iran, or Mujahideen Khalq. They are pretty much known as the MEK. And this is a group that has been fighting for freedom and democracy for over 50 years before the revolution. They were fighting against Shah's dictatorship, and they continued doing the same after the revolution. And because of the situation in Iran, because of all of the killings, and quite honestly, in the same norm as a lot of other countries have seen the resistance movement, the leaders decided to have a stronghold outside the country to stay away from, you know, being completely eliminated inside the homeland, and also understanding that international support is a key to be able to do what needs to be done and not end up, you know, in a military war, international war situation, and what have you. So long story short, our blessing is that the resistance organized has a alternative in place. It's called the National Council of Resistance of Iran, which is basically a alternative to the current regime with a very clear direction that they want to have. You know, the 10-point plan that Mrs. Maryam Rajavi, who is has been elected as the interim president for the transfer of power to people in Iran, she has basically led us with this 10-point plan, that the direction is that for the future of Iran, we want to have, you know, people ruling everything, universal suffrage, you know, free elections, women have the right for their clothing and determination and political leadership and what they want to do, you know, the different ethnicities that we have to have their own rights, and all in all in a, you know, free market economy and a future in Iran that, as far as we are concerned, should be a non-nuclear one, which basically tells us that the whole nuclear thing is a moot point when after the Ayatollahs are gone.
So wasting all this time on this agreement that they're never going to follow could be handled by just getting rid of the guy with his finger on the button.
Exactly. So the people of Iran do not want it, do not need it. We have one of the largest oil, gas, natural gas resources in the world. The people probably should know that Iran is three times as large as the state of Texas. And one-third of our country, which is the size of the state of Texas, obviously, is desert, and we have so much area that we can use for solar energy that is unbelievable. And so the alternative energies, using our gas, using, you know, natural resources, pretty much for the next 100 or maybe hundreds of years is gonna suffice what we need. And, you know, nuclear power is, with all of the issues that it has, is really not needed in our country.
Yeah.
Back to your question about, you know, the size of, you know, this resistance. It is organized. We have, in the United States, we have people active in pretty much all of the states, at least 40 some states, just like us, there are organizations that do the community outreach work just the way that, you know, Ross and Fred has been doing, and I've had the privilege of working with them. And we talk to people, we educate, you know, our representatives in terms of the proper policies. We work with them and make sure that everybody is on the same page as what needs to be done in terms of empowering the people of Iran. The same binary thing that you mentioned, the choice is not just war or appeasing the dictators. And in terms of international, obviously, the National Council of Resistance of Iran with Mrs. Rajavi is the key point that we always talk about. Mrs. Rajavi was arrested in France in 2003, and they wanted to return her to the dictators in Iran. And ever since that year, we've been holding yearly rallies, mostly in France. Those rallies grew year after year after year, and before the pandemic in 2018, our rally had about 100,000 people in attendance.
Wow.
In a hall that, mind you, even President Macron had one of his election rallies in that place, and the news that I have checked, you know, he wasn't able to fill more than 50,000-60,000 seats in that area. And through the same organization that you mentioned, Aaron, we were able to have, in our last pre-pandemic event, the 100,000 people, and we had a huge delegation from United States. Mayor Rudy Giuliani was present. Former Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich was there. The former Attorney General, Mr. Michael Mukasey, was there. Bill Richardson, who was the U.S. Ambassador to UN for a while, was there. Louis Free, who was head of the FBI, was there. General George Casey, who was the 36th Chief of Staff of the United States Army, was there. And a range of similar type of personalities from some 50 different countries, UK, Canada, Australia, France. And this was basically one of the areas that you talked about in terms of the international support that our resistance movement has built on its own. You know, getting everybody involved has had a lot of work behind it. And linking this to what we talked about in terms of what the Iranian regime is doing with the money in its pocket, in this same 2018 event that we had in Paris, it was specifically June 30th, 2018. Fred and I and Ross was also there, and that event was target of a bomb plot that was foiled by the France authorities, and an Iranian diplomat in Austria who had gone to Tehran and flown back to Austria with the bomb in his luggage. So he carried this bomb in his luggage coming from Tehran to Europe.
They obviously have amazing security at their airport, note to self.
And he was, because he enjoys, he enjoyed the diplomatic immunity, you know, they don't search his
bags. Yeah, they don't search their bags.
Yeah.
Wow, that is terrifying. Hold that thought, because I do. I want you to tell us that whole story, because I don't. When Fred had mentioned this to me the other day, I thought, and I missed that. But I think we miss a lot of really important things because we're all busy. I don't know. Well, busy.
Our media.
But our media is busy telling us a bunch of stuff we don't care about. You know, people who slap each other and stuff like that.
And that's why we get online, enjoy your beautiful theme music. And then we go on.
We try to entertain. It's the least we can do on hard topics, you know, is play a fun tune. So we'll be right back with our guests, Fred and Hamid. And you're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Struck by lightning sounds pretty frightening, but you know the chances are so small. Stuck by a bee sting, nothing but a bee thing. Better chance you're gonna buy it at the mall. But it's a 23 or 4-1 that you can fall in love by the end of this song. So get up, tell the bookie to bet I'm not a damn thing will go wrong. The odds are that we will probably be alright. Odds are we gonna be alright. Odds are we gonna be alright tonight. The odds are that we will probably be alright. Odds are we gonna be alright. Odds are we gonna be alright for another night.
But the good news is there's angels everywhere out on the street, holding out a hand to pull you back up on your feet. The ones that you've been dragging for so long, you're on your knees, you might as well be praying. Guess what I'm saying, if you're going through hell, keep on going, don't slow down. If you're scared, don't show it, you might get out, for the devil even knows you're there.
I don't know, that would go for a happy break. Two happy songs. Then I'm going back to the regular stuff. Okay, so go back to the guy with the bomb, because I think that is just stunning that you had a diplomat that was able to do that and willing to do that.
Right. So this so-called diplomat.
Yeah. Sorry.
His name was Asadullah Asadi, and he carried the bomb, and this information actually came out of the court or trial proceedings that took about 2 years. He was arrested, obviously, before the mission was accomplished. Two people who were carrying the bomb for him were intercepted and arrested before they actually got to our meeting. He got arrested, and there was a little green book that he had with the name of a series of people who were on the Iranian regime's payroll doing these kind of things in Europe. And that information has not been released yet on who those people are. And I will get back to that after, you know, finishing up this part. So this guy carried the bomb to Europe and gave it to somebody to bring it over and exploded in our meeting. And all of the details that came out of the investigation showed that it would have killed thousands of people. And obviously, in a hall that 100,000 people are sitting, if there is an explosion, you know, just the mayhem that it creates, non-bomb related casualties are going to be very, very high, obviously.
Sure.
So he got arrested. He was put on trial. Obviously, you know, as I mentioned, this meeting, it wasn't just us Iranian people. There were over 600 dignitaries from 50 different countries, including the names that I mentioned from U.S., you know, the types of Giuliani and Newt Gingrich and Michael Mukasey and Louis Freeh and a U.S. General Casey, you know. So, all of these people were sitting, you know, in the designated special section in front of the house, and you know, the bomb was supposed to be exploded close to Mrs. Rajavi because she was the main target. So a lot of people
a lot of Americans, a lot of dignitaries would have been targeted if that thing went through. So this guy was put on trial, and in February of 21, last year, about 13 months ago, he was finally convicted to the maximum allowed under the law, which was 20 years, and he's serving his term in prisons in Austria right now. And that became a very eye-opening incident for everybody. And when we talked about the two individuals who have recently been arrested here in the United States, this really shows the scope of how those monies that the Iranian regime end up earning are spent, exactly to the point that you mentioned, Bill, that, you know, the money will end up being spent on the wrongdoings that they do, all of these evil things that they do. And I one of the points that I really feel compelled to stress for all of your listeners is that, yeah, for a while, you know, this issue with the Iranian regime, this issue with the Islamic fundamentalism that they want to spread around the world, it was an Iranian issue. Then it became a Middle East issue. Now it is becoming an international issue and an American issue. But somebody's paying for these two guys who have been arrested, who, according to the reports, have been spending a lot of money trying to lure or deceive, I should say, not lure, deceive the security detail of White House and First Lady to get into, you know, into infiltrate them. So
sure.
They are spending money. You know, the reports had they have bought them gifts. They have offered them residences in the luxury apartments. So a lot of money is being spent. And the scary thing is that this was not really the first time that we've seen like this. I, getting ready for this talk, I went back and I looked up a couple of United States Department of Justice press releases. The one that I'm looking at right now is from January of 2020, 2 years ago. And this title is Two Individuals Sentence in Connection with Providing Services to Iran. And the press release by the U.S. Justice Department gets into the detail of how these two individuals have targeted people like Ross and me and Fred. And it reads that this case illustrates Iran's targeting of Americans in the United States in order to silence those who oppose the Iranian regime or otherwise further its goals.
And this is the regime, I mean, a regime that would sponsor bombing a large venue. I mean, they were fully behind sending that bomb and had their plan worked, like you said. Thousands of people could have died there. Same people, you know, are financing these two knuckleheads in D.C. trying to infiltrate some of the highest security folks in our nation. And we're sitting down at a negotiating table with them, negotiating a nuclear deal. I don't understand how we can deal with people like that. That doesn't make sense to me.
Bill, it's not only in that area the Iranian government are active in USA. In the other areas, you know, there are, for example, they are also active. For example, at January this year, in Boston, there was one Iranian. He was arrested. his name was Kaveh Afrasiabi. This Kaveh, he was practically, he was publishing the analysis and publishing in the New York Times. And when they got arrested, they realized for 14 years, he was getting, every month he was getting paid from Iranian government. And practically, he was working for Iranian government to promote the line of appeasement in Iran. And practically, the negotiation is good. This kind of, you know, what Iranian government is doing right now.
Sure.
These are the people that not only in the security, in the media, the Iranian government, they have a lot of some agents that in this country that I think we need to look at overall. We need to emphasize. We need to talk about this more. That this is more than one or two or three events. I mean, as my friend Hamid mentioned, when Asadullah Asadi he got arrested in Europe, he has the book of the network of the more than 50 people that he was paying money to the Iranian government. And that is a good experience that we saw what happened in Europe. And I'm sure the Iranian agents, they are acting here, that we need to investigate what they are doing here and what is their network in this country. Because it's not only in the security, it is in the media. They have so many elements within this country.
Yeah. It's yeah. mind-boggling that we can entertain negotiations with people that do not have our best interests, the best interests of their own people, and they get away with this stuff primarily because we're paying them. We give them the money to do it. I mean, it
Well, and okay, so I'll be the partisan hater here. Don't you find it interesting that this is always under the American rule of Democrats? This is when the Democrats sweep the table, take over everything, and then let's hurry and negotiate with Iran.
I don't get it.
Like, gee, there's nothing to do here. You know, we don't have anything important going on here. Might as well, you know. Go work with people that everybody in their own country hates. I guess maybe that's what they have in common. Might have solved the problem.
And you know, Bill and Aaron, you know, for the sake of not getting into any partisan issues, you know, even if I say that, okay, from a completely non-partisan angle, you want to negotiate so that you don't go to war, fine. You know, no, we are not saying that, oh, don't negotiate because, you know, you're terrifying people that if you don't negotiate, the only other option is war. Because that's the story, that if we don't negotiate, it's going to be war. Even if you want to negotiate, don't close your eyes on the facts. Don't close your eyes on the fact that the money is getting spent in the United States of America, you know, targeting people here in the U.S. Don't close your eyes on the fact that, you know, I do believe, since we are talking nonpartisan, I do believe that when the administration says that our foreign policy is going to be based on human rights, this was announced by the new administration. I take it at the face value that their foreign policy is going to be based on human rights. How could you say that your foreign policy is based on human rights and you do not talk about any human right issues with the Iranian regime in the negotiations?
Right. That's a great point.
How could you do that?
Yeah.
So the expectation is a very logical, simple expectation that you are saying that the previous administration was wrong. Okay, let's accept that you were wrong. You were saying that you are going to do it based on these new norms of human rights. So why aren't you telling the Iranian regime that in 1988, 30,000 people were executed in Iran within a span of a few months. And these people, according to Amnesty International, these people were not told, the families of these people were not told where these people were buried. We have quite a lot of unmarked mass graves in Iran, that thousands of these people are buried, and anybody who cares can just look up 1988 massacre and Amnesty International and read the independent reports that they have about all of these mass graves and how it is a continued crime against humanity, because the families after 30 years are still suffering, not knowing where their loved ones were are buried. How could we sit down and not talk about these? How could we not have a condition that, okay, we'll talk, we'll have an agreement. By the way, you need to let these families know where their loved ones are buried. You need to bring to justice the people who were responsible for it. And by the way, it's the current president of Iran, Ibrahim Raisi, who was one of the key people who carried out the sentences for these 30,000 people. And they openly talk about this in the Iranian regime's media. They openly talk about how they are so proud of eliminating the enemy, which is the MEK. And these are not any secret issues. They talk about it inside the country. International human rights organizations talk about it. And the only entity that is not talking about it is, you know, our own State Department sitting down and talking to these people.
Right.
That's the real kicker on it, is that these guys just seem to selectively choose the parts of history that they want to support, and they ignore the rest, which does nothing but hurt all of you. One more quick break here, and then we'll come back. And
I just want to mention the climate change is ironed out.
Oh, so that's
yeah, that's important.
That's right. We've got to get on top of that, because that's the greatest threat we face is climate change.
Mm-hmm.
Coming up on my favorite day, Earth Day. Boo! I'll make sure that we have some we have somebody who can do that topic justice. Gosh, I've got a lot of mean music about that one too. Spoiler alert. So we'll be right back with our guests, Tom Eden Fred, who don't need to be roped into the Earth Day drama. And you can find us at
wethepeopleradio.us.
Couldn't go through this whole topic without playing a Rocky movie fight song. it'd just be wrong. So anyway, it's the least we can do for the resistance to play the music, I guess. Okay, so what have we not covered that is super important? Things people, you know, there's so much that we don't know about what's really going on there, about your whole, the whole idea. I think most people think, oh, if you're Iranian, you're all down for all the stuff that's over there. So I hope people have figured out that's no longer factual for them. But what are some other things that maybe people, you know, just miss because it's never talked about?
Can I mention something, Aaron?
Go ahead. You can mention two or three things if you'd like.
Sure. You know, if you look at the history of the Iranian behavior, you know, in 2019, is this a good story? What happened in 2019? The Japanese foreign minister, he went to Tehran. And practically, he met the Khamenei in that day, Supreme Leader, tried to ease the relationship, you know, practically to help, you know, the mullahs. And what happened at the same day when they're negotiating with Khamenei, the Iranian Islamic Revolutionary Guard practically they attacked the oil tanker of the Japan. Therefore, this is what Iranian government practically how they are practicing there, how is their attitude. Therefore, the reason I mentioned this, I would love to relate it to what's going on today at negotiation today. You know, if you're monitoring the behavior of Iranian government at the negotiation, you will see practically Iranian government are like aiming nuclear guns at the rest of the whole world. And they're using this kind of tactic at the practically negotiation. And practically they're telling, oh, break time to is closing very fast. You can get to the bomb any day. Practically, these are all the tactics Iranian government is using to practically in the negotiation to keep the practical Iranian Islamic Guard out of the terrorist list. Therefore, I think it's important the Iranian Islamic Revolutionary Guard, the force forced to stay on the terrorist list and not to be removed from the list. And that is, I think, a very important factor.
I agree. And I think it's important that people know that. Okay, what else?
Absolutely. So I'm glad Fred covered the current issue, which is as part of the negotiations, you know, they intended to remove the foreign terrorist organization listing from the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, IRGC, the same terrorist group that has been mentioned a couple of times today, are responsible, according to our own Defense Department in the United States, for the death of 600-plus military people serving in Iraq. So the other thing that, Aaron, that I want to highlight is that I want all of your listeners to know that we need their help. I got to tell you that, you know, one of the things, I've lived in the United States for 40 years, a couple of kids, and I always encourage them to take part in the electoral system, use the right to vote and use the democracy that they have in this country to be able to talk to the representatives in the House, in the Senate, mm-hmm. and tell them what you want and steer them in the right direction. And quite honestly, you know, if they are not doing their thing, step up and talk to your friends and organize and, you know, run for the office and take advantage of this democracy. And one of the things that we have done in terms of the Iranian diaspora, the Iranian American communities, is that we have tried to do the same thing ourselves. I mentioned about a House Resolution 118 that over 250 members of Congress, majority, have already co-sponsored it. And it is a resolution that basically reads that it's expressing support for the Iranian people's desire for a democratic, secular, and non-nuclear republic of Iran, and condemning violations of human rights and state-sponsored terrorism by the Iranian government. So the resolution really covers all of these areas that we talked about today, that we want to basically acknowledge that the Iranian people themselves they want, they desire, they're out in the street to have their own secular and non-nuclear republic established by them paying the price. We want to condemn the human rights violations in Iran. And we want to counter the state-sponsored terrorism. So this resolution covers everything. When anybody who cares to just search for House Resolution 118 in 117th Congress of the United States, we'll read that it covers everything that we have talked about today. It covers, you know, the killing of 1,500 people in November of 2019 in Iran. It covers what Amnesty International has said about 1988 massacre in Iran. It covers the previous resolutions in the House of Representatives. It covers the current Iranian president, Ebrahim Raisi, as being part of the Death Commission, which in 1988 was responsible for the massacre of 30,000 political prisoners in Iran. It goes on by covering the alternative to the Ayatollah's lent support for Mrs. Rajavi's 10-point plan for the future of Iran, and it goes on to the case of the bombing plot in 2018 in France, and mentions, you know, the trial of the Belgian trial and the sentencing of the Iranian regime's so-called ambassador, and goes on and on with resolving that, you know, the state sponsor of terrorism should be condemned, and this attack on the rally in 2018 needs to be condemned. It calls for the countries in Europe to shut down the embassies of regime that are involved in terrorism, especially the one in country of Albania, where the core of the Iranian resistance movement organization MEK resides right now. And it, at the end, it basically suggests that, you know, the support should be for establishment of the secular, non-nuclear, democratic republic that the people of Iran desire. So the part that I want to every listener to help us with is, first of all of those who are in California's beautiful first district, drop a note for Congressman Doug LaMalfa, who has corresponded, and thank him for, you know, doing this. Thank him for standing with what is right, not only here in California and United States, but standing for what is right everywhere in the world, especially in these troubled days that we see all of these things in Ukraine, that, you know, the world is revisiting the issue that it is important to stay on the right side of the history. It is important to support the people wherever they are fighting for their freedom. And anybody who is listening to this and it's not in California's first district, look up and see if your representative has supported it or not. If they have, thank them.
I just posted that, by the way. I put the link to congress.gov, and so if people click that link, they can see the 252 co-sponsors. You can search it by state. You can search it by party. There are lots of different tools in there. Congress.gov is a very good site, and that's a congressional record, so it isn't a Republican side or a Democrat side. It's just the facts. But you can see who's on there. And if your representative is not, now remember, you don't call your senator's office because this is a House resolution, but your member of Congress should be signed on. And if they're not, you should go find out why.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe they're not paying attention. Okay, that's not actually a great sign, but you could smarten them up. You could point them toward Hamid. I've put information on there about their organization. You could point them toward that. But, yeah, there are 435 members of the House.
If I may suggest, Aaron, point them to this program and have them listen to the program on
That's true. There's that. I mean, there are 435 members of the House. There's really no reason that 250 of them would be the only ones that have signed on to support this. It's a resolution, so it's not a law of any kind. It's not going to, you know, do that sort of thing. But it's a really powerful statement. And
well, I think a lot of attention is being put on the whole Ukrainian situation.
Yeah, and it's the only country we care about right now.
Yeah, right. I mean, we can do more than one thing at a time, and it's just really important that we pay attention to what's going on over in Iran right now, because the agreements that are in process right now are going to affect us big time in the future. And so we really do need to support
And just in case you thought it was a purely partisan thing, you have, looks like currently the 179 members of the Republican caucus in the House and 73 members of the Democratic caucus. So if your representative is a Democrat, there's some lifting to be done there.
Yeah.
And why aren't all the Republicans on there, by the way? So
exactly.
I think that's a great point.
Yeah, and the resolution was actually introduced by our own Mr. McClintock in California and Mr. Sherman. You know, a strong Democrat, a strong Republican got together. So it's definitely a bipartisan effort. And with all of the explanation and discussion that we had today, definitely worthy of anybody who is concerned about the current events in the world to basically know and understand that countering the Iranian regime has a third option, and that is by empowering the people of Iran and not thinking about the other two binary options that you mentioned.
That's just really important. I hope they go to your website and do some reading, because it's interesting material, and it isn't super confusing or really, you know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to decode it. It's very well laid out.
Hamid, thank you so much for mentioning Congressman Doug Lamarck's support for Resolution 118. I mean, the congressman continues support for other resolution as well, really, and appreciate it. And also, you know, the congressman is standing for liberty, and he's proving that he's supporting in action the liberty, and really appreciate it, what he's doing.
Yeah, he and Tom McClintock work on a lot of things together, because they're both, the districts are affected out here in the West with the water problems and a lot of that sort of thing. But this really transcends all of that, and these are choices that the American people are paying for. You know, whether they fully understand the issue or not is another matter, but bottom line is you're going to foot the bill on this. And now some of these guys are showing up pretending to be Secret Service, so... What does that mean for the future? I believe they feel kind of emboldened.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I got to wonder, too, were they the only two that they sent over?
Yeah, well, Dianne Feinstein had a Chinese spy driving her around for 20 years, so, you know, they're not really all that. Apparently the security isn't all that, and a sack of chips. Yet another reason to be your own security.
They are the only two that have been caught.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I say. Is that they're not?
Should probably
not
check with Eric Swalwell.
On the intelligence from only two people in this.
See
country.
If Fang Fang has any of her friends here. It's crazy that kind of thing can happen. But if you guys are making some real headway. Screwing up their media, their in-state media and all that, I would imagine that, you know, desperate people do desperate things, obviously. And we can't thank you enough for taking time out of your Sunday afternoon to come and make us smarter. We always need to be smarter. We make better choices when we're smart.
Absolutely.
So, thanks a lot, Hamid. Thanks, Fred.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. It's been a very interesting conversation for sure.
No problem, man. We thank you for giving us this time to be able to discuss these issues with you and through you with all of your wonderful listeners. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. And as things come up and as this develops and things, if you think there are things that should go forward, please contact us, okay?
No, absolutely. thank you so much also for the time, and I appreciate it, you know, your help. I really, really appreciate it.
Have a great rest of your day.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys. Okay. We'll talk soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
For good.